Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. And we welcome in our friend Jared Stillman to the program. Stilly, good morning. How are you?
I am fabulous. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing great. Thank you for taking time to be with us. How was your day yesterday at the golf course? Did you have a good time?
Oh, it was a wonderful trek out there, and it was a wonderful day and a great charity event to be had by all, and salute to the 615 Open. Can't wait to do it next year.
That's right. No doubt about it. So we were just having the Jonathan Marchessault discussion, and it seems like there's at least some willingness on his part to either be open for a trade or move on this offseason. Elliot Friedman was on with DVD yesterday and talked about how maybe the Predators are taking a look at the way their roster is constructed and may be open to doing that as well. Where do you come down on this? What would you like to see the Predators do with Marchessault this offseason? What do you think they will do?
I, first of all, love the fact that Elliot Friedman was like, you know, the Predators are aware that he wouldn't be upset if he was traded to a preferred destination.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, give me a break. So here's what I've decided. I worried about this when Marchessault made the comments he made at the end of the season, basically calling out the coach. I knew that, you know, in the Predator traditional landscape, that was not going to sit well. And that's why when I had Sean Henry on the show after Barry Trotz announced that Andrew Burnett was coming back, I asked him, I said, can Jonathan Marchessault and Andrew Burnett coexist, given the fact that Jonathan Marchessault is willing to call out Andrew Burnett? Because that's not really the Predator way. And, of course, he said, of course they can. You know, this is what we want, you know, et cetera. But I really did wonder, could they accept the fact that Marchessault trashed the coach? Like, could they accept that? Or would they look at that like, bad apple, we don't want him around? And I lean towards they need a little bit of him. Like, they need a little of that juice in their room. They need a little bit of that juice in their organization. Now, I didn't consider the idea that Marchessault himself would want out, but when you say that, hey, I only want out to specific destinations, that doesn't really mean that you want out. So, I mean, I look at it like I'm not trading Jonathan Marchessault unless somebody calls me and offers me something really good, or there's a situation where I can flip him and then take his money and use it somewhere else, like a right shot defenseman that would be a first pair right shot defenseman or a number two centerman or something like that, that I could move Marchessault's money and then add. I'm not doing it. So I think they need a little bit of the Vegas cutthroat style in them. And I think that he needs to, you know, suck it up and find a way to be a part of the solution around here. So I'm not trading him, and I'm not acquiescing to his wishes of sending him exactly where he wants to go. I'm too busy. I don't have time to worry about what Jonathan Marchessault wants every 5 minutes. And so, no, he's not getting his wish. And if the Predators, if Andrew Burnett doesn't want him around, don't want him around, I'm not giving him their wish either. They're going to find a way to work this out.
Whose wish is getting granted then? No one's happy? Well, I mean, think, don't you think, Jared, like, because to me,
I think they need to work it out.
Okay. But if he wants to be elsewhere, and yeah, of course he wants his own specific destinations, and he's ripped the coach. I understand. Like, we've talked about what you just said, which is the idea that, you know, that willingness to be frank and, you know, not afraid to call something out. Maybe that's good. But also, as far as we know, really he did it in the media, right? Which isn't necessarily ideal. So if he's technically a malcontent at this point, and he and Brunette are going to struggle to coexist, don't you think you have a little inkling that maybe you should move him?
No. I think those two should figure it out. I also love
figure
the fact
it out, guys.
That when it comes to Marchessault, it's like, well, he'd be willing to be moved, but only to a place that he likes. No. I'll send you to Winnipeg. You know, I mean, like, I think this is ridiculous. Like, I think, you know, Marchessault may be trying to throw a teeny little bit of a fit, but he wants things done on his term. Well, that's not life. And so suck it up. And when it comes to the Predators and the fact that, you know, I heard Elliot say this the day of the NFL draft. He was on the midday show, and Elliot was talking about how the Predators had a tough season and that sometimes when people like Marchessault say the things they say after a tough season, certain organizations don't appreciate that level of honesty. And I felt like if there was ever an organization that doesn't appreciate that level of honesty, it's the Predators. Because I do feel like the Predators pump a lot of sunshine or, you know, always are glass half full. And Marchessault certainly was not glass half full with his comments at the end of the year. And I thought, you know what? They need that, though. Like, they need somebody that's going to come in there and say things people don't want to hear. They need that in the room. And so I think that, again, my goal is, hey, you guys find a way to coexist. And I'll also say this about my life. Personally, I think a lot of my relationships have been, they've become stronger through conflict, you know, addressing conflicts. And I do wonder if Marchessault and the Predators can address their conflicts, that that could actually make the relationship stronger. The Predators could get a little bit of what they need from Marchessault's personality, and Marchessault could play with his head outside of his ass next season, unlike last year.
They probably do need some of that grit inside, because people like you are not judging them on anything until, well, like David Edstrom develops in 4 years. Since there's no judgment from you and you're giving them a complete pass and carrying their water, they probably do need some internal conflict.
I said they should fire the coach. I don't understand. You're carrying the water for the team, Jared.
Well, specifically for Barry Trotz. No, specifically for Barry Trotz. Let's go ahead and be specific there. David Edstrom, I just want to see how that works out. Then we'll judge him.
I just don't think it's fair to hire a guy to be the general manager, for him to come in and say, hey, my plan is all these young guys, but it's going to take a while for these young guys to develop. And now you all want to fire him before the young guys even come close.
No one said fire him. No one said fire him.
Played in North America. So what do you want, Joe?
Well,
you want to fire him next year?
I don't know. I mean, I think we have to see how things play out. I definitely do not agree with you that if they get a little better and get to 85 points, that's okay. Let's see how David Edstrom works out. I mean, come on. That is the most water-carrying, homer-ass, weak take I've ever heard.
No.
The
most water-carrying homer-ass take you've ever heard would have been after the 2022 season, when the water carriers for the team were arguing that they were right there after they got swept by Colorado, which I thought was intellectually dishonest.
Who said that, Robbie?
I'll let you go back and research that.
I legitimately don't remember.
But
I don't either. Are you making people up right now? Are these like imaginary friends?
There's a reason why I'm not saying, you know, I'll just let you guys think about this.
Okay.
But
now I'm intrigued.
I do believe that, again, you know, and this may sound convenient because last year was such a disappointment. But I do believe when Barry Trotz says, like, the plan all along was about the young guys, and I was just trying to buy players to keep the team competitive so that the fans could have something to watch while they develop the young guys. I think there's something to that.
Yeah, and I just signed the goalie to a huge deal, and, like, it's a complete go-for-it roster. But, okay, keep going.
Now, that might get him fired, is the goalie contract, because the goalie stinks. And there's no getting out of that.
But
and
David
he traded Edstrom. The young goalie. But at the same time, these guys haven't even played, like, to a certain extent, in Edstrom's case, he hasn't even played North American hockey.
He's a ways away.
But yeah. I want Surin hasn't played North American hockey. Like, I want to see these young guys they've drafted. Like, I want to give them a chance, because the stupidest thing I think you could do is say, okay, you know, we're going to draft a bunch of young guys, we're going to rebuild the team, and then get mad that things aren't better at the NHL level right away, and then fire the guy, and then have all these guys come up here, become superstars, and it's like, well, you know, you fired the guy that got all these superstars for your organization, that drafted them.
Yeah, the superstar waterfall is on the way.
The only way that you can really win in this league is by drafting high-end players. Like, that's the only way you can truly win. And I mean, Barkov in Florida, how'd they get him? They drafted him. McDavid, how'd they get him? They drafted him. Draisaitl, how'd they get him? They drafted him. So, I want to see how the young players do, because that was the deal. When Barry Trotz took over, this was a rebuild. Well, I want to see whether or not the rebuild actually builds correctly or not, and not just change my mind and lose my patience because Steven Stamkos played like an old pawpaw last year.
So I've heard you talk about the Vanderbilt program and Tim Corbin and the resurgence over the last couple of weeks. And
how about that?
I largely agree with most of what you said. I do have this question, though. Like, how much of this do you think we can already determine, and how much of it has to start now in terms of the postseason really being what matters when it comes to, is Vanderbilt actually back in kind of the thick of the elite here, the Vanderbilt-Tennessee rivalry? Like, if Tennessee goes on to the College World Series and Vanderbilt's out in the Super Regional, does that not change kind of what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks?
Sure. I mean, you're only a success in the moment that the success happens. But at the same time, like, as of right now, Vanderbilt, in my opinion, has overtaken Tennessee for the top team in the state. Now, that doesn't mean that that can't change, just like anything else. But that 10-0 spanking, you know, on Saturday, that to me was a massive statement from Vanderbilt. You know, Vanderbilt takes 2 out of 3 at Tennessee. Tennessee's not having the season that they love. Tennessee beats Texas, maybe the number one team in the country. And then they go up against Vanderbilt and get absolutely housed. And considering that this time last year it looked like Tennessee was leaving Vanderbilt in the dust, I have been incredibly impressed. And again, go back to Tim Corbin. I didn't say Tim Corbin should be fired. You know, I though was very skeptical about where this program was headed, and very few people, you know, very few, and I don't mean to call Tim Corbin old here, but he, you know, I think it's, we would agree, certainly not young. You know, a lot of times with these old coaches, they can't learn new tricks, and they won't adjust to the game the way it is. They'll just sit there and complain about it. They'll just complain about the state of the game. And that wasn't what Tim Corbin did, and I have a lot of respect for that. I have a lot of respect for people that can look in the mirror and can say, okay, I have to change. The same way Clark Lee with his football program looked in the mirror and said, I have to change.
What did he change? What did Tim Corbin change?
What did Tim Corbin change? Got eight players in the transfer portal.
They had their best player 2 years ago was out of the transfer portal.
They spent money in NIL.
Yeah, this is not this year.
Gentry was on the show the other day, and Gentry said he was over there this fall, and Tim Corbin told Gentry, we're going to try to win this way.
Yeah, but again,
the theory was this time last year was that Tim Corbin could not adjust to the changes in the game, that he didn't go through the portal the way UT went through the portal, that they weren't spending NIL the way that everybody else was spending NIL. I remember 2 years ago, this was the same conversation.
2 years ago, yes.
When they got beat by Xavier.
Yes.
And so Tim Corbin has changed, and Clark Lee has changed. And this is not some Brian Callahan, let's get around the campfire, sing kumbaya change. This is legitimate changes to the structure. Tim Corbin fired Mike Baxter, his hitting coach, who was a player for him at Vanderbilt, because he said, we have to change. And so right, I give credit
that's
to that.
That's a coaching move, Jared. I mean, he's made
change.
Other coaching moves.
The kind of changes, again, Brian Callahan won't make. Brian Callahan, Denard Wilson's back, and Nick Holtz is back, and he only changed after that disastrous season, the special teams coach, and that was because he was kicking and screaming to do it because there was no other choice. Some people, like, everybody will say, hey, you know what, I've got to look in the mirror, I've got to make changes, but very few people are actually willing to do it. And in the case of Tim Corbin, he did it, and I give a lot of credit to that.
Yeah, you're overstating that quite a bit, but we don't have time to keep
going back
and forth on it.
I'll say this. The coach, the second-seeded coach in this region, Dan McDonald, he won't make these changes. And this is why I think Vanderbilt is going to absolutely walk through this regional and win in three games.
So, sorry, Vanderbilt fans. Hide your ears.
Oh, boy. Good stuff, Jared. Thank you for taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you next week.
Joe, we got to get you some new clothes, man. I saw you on the Paul Feinbaum show with that, like, you know, 10-year-old Dillard's polo. We need to
Dillard's.
We need to upgrade the Rex Road collection. We need to have Katie take you out to Lululemon or something and get you a little more hip with the times.
That's a very nice polo, and it was very hot outside.
What'd you make of like the big hitter lineup of Kirby Smart, Lane Kiffin, and Joe Rexroad? That was something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised. Man. You know, what I heard was that they were going to get Nick Saban on there, but they said, no, we can get Joe.
No, actually, what truly happened is I was there, and Eli Drinkwitz couldn't get out of a meeting. They're like, hey, Rick, can you come up here and just do this segment? I'm like, all right. Seriously.
Really
so it was Drinkwitz. Yes. So it should have been Eli Drinkwitz. It was me
you.
Instead.
I'd much rather hear
but,
you.
But I take offense to your assessment of my polo. That's a very nice shirt.
I was going to say, of all the people whose opinions I care about the least, Joe is up there, but Eli Drinkwitz might be ahead of Joe.
Thank you, Jared.
See you guys.
Jared Stillman. every Friday morning at 7 o'clock. We'll react to some of what Jared had to say there. Get some thoughts on the text line. A couple of Titans questions to get to. We'll do that next as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. 102.5 The Game is your racing station. Tune in this weekend for all the NASCAR races at the Nashville Super Speedway on The Game, presented by Green Trees. Tonight it's the Rackley Roofing 200 at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow you can check out the Tennessee Lottery 250 at 6:30. And then the Cracker Barrel 400 coming up at 6 o'clock on Sunday. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Green Trees Company, a family-owned cannabis company and dispensary located in Hendersonville, a new location in West Nashville as well, and available online at greentreescompany.com. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Joe, a couple of questions at the end of the show yesterday. We've had one so far this morning, so let's go ahead and get your thoughts on it. Does Jeffrey Simmons not showing up to the phase three of OTAs, does that bother you if you're a Titans fan, if you're a member of the Titans coaching staff? He doesn't have to be there. It's voluntary. But as Kuharsky pointed out the other day, he's the only one that wasn't there. Like, there's some other guys that aren't on the field, but they're in the building, kind of rehabbing. Simmons is not there. As Kuharsky has pointed out, he does have, you know, a legal situation going on with child support. It's not like, you know, overly huge
people
deal.
Have stuff going on.
Right. So how much, scale of 1 to 10, how much are you bothered by Simmons not being there?
I will go 6.5.
That's higher than I thought.
I'm not. Yeah. I mean, it's more than like right in the middle. You know, it's a little bit bothersome. You know, again, it's like these things happen every year and then we forget about who even was there. Like I remember the year like Derrick Henry didn't show up, you know, and it turned out he was getting his degree at Alabama, although it was weird that he didn't like call someone. You know, that's what Malarkey said.
Yeah.
But I remember that Jarrell Case is like, well, you know who you can trust, and it was like this big thing and who cared? Like the next year no one cared. No one knew, you know, training camp happened. Like just things at this time of year in the bigger picture end up not really mattering. But yeah, the fact that he's the only guy there, the fact that he's had some of these weird issues, you know, again, like social media driven, trying to sign autographs with Andrew's blood. And just not his plays diminish. You know, his leadership has been questioned publicly, and I know that Jeffrey Simmons knows what people are saying.
Oh yeah,
there's no doubt about that. And so then your response is, I'm just going to be the one guy who doesn't show up. Look, there are teams where there are star players who do that stuff. Oh, yeah. They get to a certain age, and I get that, but I just feel like, look, they are trying to start a new era. He's still a key part of that. He's in the midst of he got paid and he's in the midst of this contract. And so I think it would be certainly would be better for him to be there. So I'm somewhat bothered by it.
I think the leadership part of it is what kind of bothers me about it. Like at the end of the day, in terms of his play, like him not being here in late May, especially at that position, doesn't really matter. Like, how much are you really doing at that position that is so heavily reliant on physical contact and getting through blocks and things like that? So, like, that part of it I don't really care about. But it is the leadership part of it, of, like, you're supposed to be a leader on this team and you're, like, the one guy that's not there. It's not like you're going through some contract dispute. Like, it just – you know, I guess I always leave room this time of year of, like, are there things going on that we just don't know about? Yeah. Like, you always have to be kind of cognizant of that in these discussions. But if it's just as simple as he's working out elsewhere and is the one guy that's not there and there's nothing really else going on, yeah, it bothers me a little bit if I'm a Titans player. If I'm a player, if I'm a fan, I'm like, dude, you're supposed to be, you know, one of the leaders here and you're the one guy that didn't show up. Like, that doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, and the thing you said there about we don't know what's going on, that's why I could probably never take one of these to like a 9 or an 8 or a 9, because that really – that does happen sometimes. And maybe there is something – with the child support thing that he has to deal with, I don't know. People have stuff, and it's not critical at all from a football perspective. But every team has new players every year. He should be in the building, getting to know people, getting to know new guys. You got new guys up front, new guys who he will be playing with. You may not be doing much rep wise that matters, but it's not a bad thing to get to know him a little bit.
Well, and here's the other thing, and maybe I don't know. Maybe this is me being too much of an old man yelling at the cloud, but like, to me, it's one thing if the year before, number one, you play well, and number two, your team is good, and you're going, you know, if you're 11-6 last year, and you're coming off a year where you're a Pro Bowl level player and you're an all pro, you're like in the discussion of the elite defensive tackles, then do what you want, man. I don't care if you don't show up. When you go 3-14 last year, like, doesn't that kind of change the equation a little bit of, yeah, you probably need to show up and get in there.
Yeah, and look, I can tell from having Jared on last segment, I'm sure Jared has gone nuts about this whole leadership stuff and overreacted to it, right? Which, again, to me, it's like, hey, it's worth trying something. I don't have a strong feeling either way. I'm not, like, super excited about it, but also it's like, okay, fine. But
talking about Callahan's kind of
awesome Callahan stuff. But, you know, if you're Callahan, I would assume doing these things, talking about everybody having the bad taste in their mouth from last year, all that stuff, I would assume you'd want one of your best players, really your star, your closest thing to a star you have, to be around.
It's a good point. And I do wonder, like, again, it's voluntary, so it's not like he has to be there. But I when I saw Kuharski put that out the other day that he was the one guy not there, it's like, man, it's just another, you know, Dustin from Hopkinsville on the text line says, it's just another quote-unquote small issue from Simmons among building small issues. And then he says he's not a leader. He's going to lead players to drama. I don't know about that second part of it, but
like they're going to go to a Broadway play.
I don't know what that means. But to that point, it kind of always feels like there's a little bit of something with him, which we talked about last year with all the Twitter stuff, right? Like, it's always kind of something with Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's too many somethings that aren't good. Nothing terrible.
Right.
Although, again, I did fear for Andrew's life for a poor Andrew. Man.
Maybe that should have been a sign that the season wasn't going to go very well last year. I don't know.
Yeah. We may have said that even at the time.
I don't know. We might
have. Well, between the laughs.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the Titans coming up next. We'll do that with the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad at 745. TD will be with us at 8. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 the game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal of the Week, 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. 312 Pizza Company serves the best pizza in town, as well as Chicago-style eats like Chicago dogs, Italian beef sandwiches, and more. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals to get half off a $30 gift card to 312 Pizza Company while supplies last. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Speaking of the studio, I'm like knocking stuff down in here.
Yeah. Is that?
Under attack.
So, first of all, they already, for some reason, there's a sign. It's a great poster for Victory, a great Sly Stallone, Michael Caine movie about soccer in like 1980. But
it had to have come from Big Joe.
Yes, but the glass is broken on it, and it says Rex Rage on it. That's probably Big Joe. I had nothing to do with it, but this thing just almost just fell on you and almost, like, the rest of the glass shattered. Isn't that dangerous to have the glass like that, by the way? That could have punctured your kidney, dude.
Could have.
Like we probably need to fix that, right?
Could have.
We need to get the glass out of
it. I should also probably not be up in the break, like, impersonating Chase McCabe's golf swing, because I think that's what led to the damage that was going on there.
And by the way, you need to put Chase's golf swing, you need to put that on the internet.
I think Big Joe might have done it yesterday.
Oh, did he?
I can do it. I can follow
up. Did Big Joe tweet it out? Yeah. Okay, good.
I can follow up.
It's Barkley-esque.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Straight right, huh? Just boom.
And not straight right in terms of like, oh, yeah, he hit it and it went like 170 yards to the right. It's like about 6 yards. Hit it right off the toe.
Like just went this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I there were people that we were golfing with the Predators yesterday that said, I was like, you guys need to, you have to watch Chase hit one shot because I guarantee you've never seen anything like it. And he did it. And to his credit, Chase is a great sport about it. He knows. And he just gets up there and does it.
Yeah,
he didn't care.
I respect it. And I'm not just saying that because Chase could have me killed.
It's true. He's going to start messing with the temperature in here in a minute.
Yeah.
Here comes the Arctic blast in the studio. These guys won't shut up about his golf swing. Got a people on the text line. I mean, it is interesting, the viewpoint on the Jeffrey Simmons part of this. You know, we had some conversations about Jeffrey Simmons a couple years ago on the show, Joe, and it was more to do with, you know, it was less about leadership at that time, and it was more to do as, all right, they just paid him all this money. Is he playing to the level that is worth all that money. And I remember, you know, we had a couple-day discussion about that kind of in the offseason a couple years ago. And Titans fans, some were really mad at us. Like, they were really mad about, like, suggesting that Jeffrey Simmons wasn't one of the elite defensive tackles in the league. And I feel like, for the most part, that's kind of gone by the wayside now based on the way that he's played over the last couple years. And it feels like, and I know this, you know, some of this is natural when your team goes 3-14. I get that. But it kind of feels like Jeffrey Simmons with the fan base is starting to rub some of the fan base the wrong way, I think, with not only, like, the OTA stuff, but, like, you know, in all seriousness, the situation with Andrew last year and, you know, the social media stuff, coupled with, of course, maybe not living up to the contract that he's been paid at this point.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think people have backed off on the, you know, this blind defense of Simmons as a player. He's a good player. He played well last year. He's been a good player. But in 2021 – we were like, okay, so it's Aaron Donald, and, like, he's in a
– how short
how
is the
close
list?
Is he to the top of that? And it's not that anymore. Is that all him diminishing or whatever, getting paid and change? I don't – you know, like, I don't think he's a guy who got paid and said, okay, screw it. I don't think that at all. I think he cares. I think he's good. I think he's diminished some. I think probably injuries are the biggest culprit. And also – what's around him, just like football with anything. We talk about quarterbacks and we try to isolate them and they're everything. And you do that with defensive players too. You know, when like Danico Autry was next to him, boy, did he look a lot better, didn't he?
Well,
and like when he had a good defense around him and a good everything, good, you know, like a head coach who was a great defensive mind, all that stuff, he was a lot better. And I don't think that's a coincidence either.
Well, again, like, Jeffrey Simmons is not old, right? Like, what's he, 27? Is that how old he is? I think that's his – yeah, he's 27. So, maybe 28 in late July.
They're prime years right now.
So, you should be – you're right. They should be in your prime right now, and it just doesn't feel like he's been the same player the last couple of years. Now, to your point, how much of that is him? How much of that is the situation around him? But if you think it's the situation around him, right, let's say that you're operating under that set of beliefs – well, right now, Joe, I'm looking at their defense, and I'm like, okay, look at their edge rusher group. Look at their ability to get after the passer in terms of proven commodities of getting after the passers. They don't have very many of them right now. So how is that going to affect Jeffrey Simmons? Like, we spent last year talking about the combo of him and Sweat up the middle, and could that be kind of the combo that really makes the
strongest
Titans defense
point of the team
dangerous? And it really wasn't last year. Like, Sweat was fine. Sweat had a fine rookie season. You know, he needs to get after the quarterback more this year, and we'll see if he can do that. Simmons was fine last year, but they weren't dominant, right? And they could not overcome not having much of a pass-rushing threat beyond them. And by the way, that team had Harold Landry, who still ends up as, you know, close to double-digit sack guy, even after a, you know, I think we would all agree he's taking a bit of a downturn. I'm looking at this roster right now. They don't even have that. At the moment, I don't think, unless, you know, Oladejo's a freak to start out there.
Yeah. No, look, the hope, you know, Trevor says, I'm so over Simmons. He warrants way too much talk for lack of production, getting into fights, et cetera, so they should have traded him to Vrabel. Well, you can be over Simmons, but, like it or not, he's a huge player and key to this team. He is. Like, that's just – the reality is this defense, to me, as constructed, you just laid out the edge, you look at the whole defense, I don't think it has a chance to be competitive if he doesn't have a very good year. And I do think that – I think one of the keys that's not on him is Sweat coming back in great shape, second year ready to – because Simmons, obviously – and, you know, Simmons was different because he had the ACL, and you started to see it his rookie year late. It was like, okay, wow, they got a guy. And then the next year, boom, he takes over, Casey's out. But can Sweat take that second-year jump and pair with Simmons and actually be, like, to me, what still could be the strength of the team? I mean, it still could be. So I understand being over Simmons, but, like, it's not going to – like. We're not going to stop talking about him because it's just a really important part of this team. And that is, again, goes into why him not being there right now just doesn't sit well unless there is something else going on.
And by the way, a good point from Jared on my personal text line of don't forget about the nobody runs the ball on the Tennessee Titans quote, which Wasn't it the next week that the Packers went out there and just lit them up on the ground, and then later in the year, Washington ran for 267 yards on them?
Yeah, it was very cold that day, though, remember.
Yes, it was.
It was like 48.
I'm just going to say it. Was that Brownlee?
Yeah.
Guys, nobody else is going to tell you this, so I will. It's pretty cold out here today.
Look, no one else has the courage to talk about what
it's
we brave today.
41 degrees out here today in Washington.
Someday we will speak of this moment in these elements. God, it was like climbing Mount Everest.
God, I forgot about that. Man, what a tire fire last year was.
Oh, they had some great moments.
Totally like
on and
top,
off the field.
Top 10 of all the things that went wrong last year. I mean, that's not even bringing up special teams. Good gracious.
So here's a text. I read this. I like to. It's good to have some, you know, back and forth on things. Texter says, we don't have a single player in defense scares an offensive coordinator, with the exception of Simmons. He can only do so much. He's the best player on our team. I don't understand why everybody keeps bashing him. Imagine if we had, at the minimum, a top 10 pass rusher and a decent defensive tackle to pair him with, his numbers would be a lot different. Yeah.
Okay, but they're paying
that's
him.
A little bit sunshiny, I will say.
They're paying him to generate pressure and numbers by himself, regardless of who's around him, right? Like, I think that's kind of the point in this discussion. Like, I agree that if the Titans had better players around him on the defensive side of the ball, he would benefit to that. I think we all agree with that.
Absolutely.
But he is a guy that you are paying to be a guy that is a driver of that, right? And he's not been that the last couple of years.
Yeah, like he talks a lot about, you know, go watch film, how much am I double? And it's true. And, yes, it is easier to focus on him now with what's around him compared to, again, like you said, Landry. Like that 21 defense, they didn't have Derrick Henry. Their offense wasn't doing that hot. They still won all those games. They got the one seed because, you know, like the Chiefs come in here, they destroy them with that defensive front, right? So how different is it? He's different. What's around him is different. But, you know, I mean, like he's still, even when you're getting doubled, like you got to beat some of those. You've got to make more plays. Even getting like that's just life as a star defensive tackle.
Well, I don't think I agree that people are bashing him. Like nobody's saying he's a bad player, but he is not.
Some people are bashing him. I mean, PK thinks he's like the worst leader in the history of leaders.
I guess there is that. But I think you and I agree he's a good player. You want him to be in the conversation of the elite defensive tackles. And it's hard to say that he's been that the last couple of years.
But if you talk about how could the Titans this year be, you know, surprise, and how could they, obviously you think about offense and Cam Ward, but that, like, realistically, outside of some just crazy stuff that we would never foresee, like DK is rookie of the year or something like that, right? Yeah. Well, one of the actual realistic paths is that Simmons has a big bounce back year. It is possible.
It is. I mean, you know, injuries have been part of it over the last couple of years too, right? Not been the whole thing, but it's been part of it. So can you stay healthy this year? And then there are other people that will say, all right, well, he started to maybe trend downward the last couple of years. Is that going to change as he moves into being 28, 29 over the next couple of years? And that's when we got into the conversation over the offseason of was he going to get traded or not, which obviously he is not at this point.
And just remember, you know, I don't know how much impact this is, but I do know that it was real and true that in 2022 he did play. Yeah, they're trying to hold on to that division title that they end up losing, and he did stick it out every week. He cares, and he was not healthy, and he's shooting up the thing every week, and then you sometimes wonder, like, okay, is there a lasting effect from that?
Right. 615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. We'll have TD coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get into all things Titans with him as well. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I ask better press conference questions than you do.
TV prospect! TV prospect!
Joe, we got to get you some new clothes, man. I saw you on the Paul Feinbaum show with that, like, you know, 10-year-old Dillard's polo.
You know, that's just like your opinion, man.
I'm talking about your clothes.
Look at Petit Fair, a.k.a.
PT.
PT!
I was going to say, of all the people whose opinions I care about the least, Joe is up there, but Eli Drinkwitz might be ahead of Joe.
Get on back there. They look up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Yes.
White Sox. White Sox. Go, go, White Sox. Let's go.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant. That may be my favorite matchup of all time. Good stuff for me insofar.
It's good stuff, but trying to trigger me, and apparently you've given me some information I cannot. I need to be careful. Not be a triggered mother farter on this thing,
Let's not disclose that information either. It won't get trolled.
Holy fart. I need to be careful, apparently. All right. You're like, we are farted.
It still makes me nervous every time.
Yep. Yeah, by the way, I don't know the brand of that shirt that Jared ripped, but it's only like 3 years old, and I think it's like a – I don't care about brands, you know? Like, I hate – like, Katie and I sometimes –
I would say the T-shirt under the polo was a nice touch to it. We did have people on the text
the white
line
shirt.
The next day. The white shirt under the polo was like, Rex Rhodes acting like it's 1997 having the T-shirt under the polo.
Well – so this is a point of contention in my marriage, and I don't care, because if I don't do that, especially in a hot day, I need that to take the sweat, and I don't want my nipples to be raw. Can I say nipple? We okay with that?
I hear you.
So I'm going to wear an undershirt. So, and that shirt, I don't know. Again, another argument. This is not at all what I was going to talk about today. What is that, you know, Katie, sometimes she'll buy like a nice shirt or something for me. I mean, look, the reality of my life is that Katie has bought my clothes for about 25 years now. But, I don't like the polo. I don't like the label stuff on a shirt. Okay. I just think it's kind of cheesy, man.
Oh, yeah, you can milk anything with nipples.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
So, anyway, but I think that shirt was a very fine brand. Although, not that there's anything wrong with a Dillard shirt, I guess. I don't know that I've ever had a Dillard shirt.
I thought the setting that you and Fine Bob had with the beach in the background was beautiful. I thought everything about it was lovely.
It was very lovely. It was. And I went on there and, frankly, decided to just be like, just start ripping the Big Ten, which is what I'm going to get to real fast here. Because, you know, there's a lot to rip on with the SEC, without question. And they overstate things. There's a lot of hyperbole. I mean, my God, this week in Florida, SEC coaches, seriously, like, they act like playing in the SEC is like going to war. It's like, calm down, guys. Okay, yes, you have the best league, but can we take it easy a little bit? And then yesterday, Sankey's handing out these big info packets about like their, you know, all their metrics for the last 10 years. But getting into it this week, and I've got, you know, some comments on a column right now from the Big Ten side of things. Guys, there is no comparison, okay? There is no comparison in the quality of football, not money. You got more money, Big Ten, a little bit. It's close. That's a great debate. Big Ten, SEC revenue and fan bases and tailgating and state, those are all great debates. The football, it is not close. So I went through this as we talk about these auto bids, ridiculous. Tony Petitti, we've ripped him. We've gone through it. Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, is trying to push through this auto bid garbage and play-in game garbage, which would be terrible for a sport that's already dealing with all kinds of things, ripping it apart and mangling it beyond disfigurement, okay? This would be, to me, by far the worst thing you could do, okay? But part of the argument back, there's a million arguments back, but one of them is, again, you're going to give four to that league? So let's talk about what programs in both leagues. In the next 20 years, if you had to bet your money, say, here, list the programs that could win a national championship. I guess I don't know how you bet money on that, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You had to put it on the line. Here are the programs that could win a national championship that are legitimately, like, I could see that program winning a national championship in the next 20 years. Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, yes. Oklahoma, Texas.
LSU.
LSU.
Auburn.
Auburn. Texas A&M. Yep. Some people can complain about that. Texas A&M has every resource you want. Now, I know they've screwed it up, but you have to include them. That's eight. There's somebody else, too.
Would you go Ole Miss?
No, I did not include Ole Miss. I wrote this, and of course I'm stupid and not like looking at what I wrote.
That did we say been... Florida?
Yes. Okay. No, we did not say Florida.
There you go.
There
Florida.
You go.
Yeah.
I don't think it's arguable that those nine belong in that discussion. And yeah, like, you know, you could have an Ole Miss, but I'm not going to include them. I'm including, like, you feel good about absolutely all the elements are there for those nine. Okay, so let's go through the Big Ten. Michigan, Ohio State just won the last two. Of course, they're in there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to include Oregon for sure. I think they've got all the things you need. And I'm going to include Penn State.
Yep.
They got all the things you need. Please tell me a fifth team. There is not a fifth team that you can make any case for.
I would make one. I don't know about this coach. USC, you can win a national championship.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, there's five. I hate expansion. Damn it. Okay, fine, it's five. But that's still, okay, so that's, I in my mind, it was, my. I didn't write USC in the column, but that's okay, it'll be fine. Ignore the column. 9-5, okay?
Yeah.
Yes, USC absolutely has a profile. 9-5. And again, beyond that, get into the ones that you wouldn't. I mean, I'll take Ole Miss and what they have going for them over Minnesota,
Nebraska.
Iowa. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, and that's the thing. Like, Nebraska was a team, the program that formerly, I can't say that anymore about them. How can you say that about them? There's a huge difference, is the point. And Big Ten fans, I assume you hate the SEC, and there's a lot about the bluster from the SEC that's annoying, that makes it worse, and you think media is all, you know, it's all the SEC media. But can we, like, look at the actual football being played and be realistic? It's not close.
Got one text that says if you're going to have Florida, you have to have South Carolina and Ole Miss. Based on what?
No.
Florida,
what are you talking about?
Florida has won recent national championships.
They've won three in the last 30 years. I mean, they yes. No. That's, you do not have to have Ole Miss and South Carolina. There is a huge difference. Sometimes you go with coaching hires, you go the wrong way. But no, the profiles of those programs are very different.
615-737-1025. Is our phone number. Teron Davenport will be with us coming up next. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. We got weekend winners coming up at 8:30. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.